Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jada Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. And, you know, if we... I think this was one of those shows where we said more than any other time, save it for the show, like before we started recording, because we're going to talk about some good time stuff, and it should be very interesting. But I am still sick, so I'm drinking coffee and mostly Baileys.
And mostly Baileys.
We all know what Nathan's drinking because he posted it on Facebook.
That's right. Well, like I said, I was getting everything ready, and then I looked at like my bottle of Tanqueray. I'm like, that's not even one glass worth of gin left in the bottle. What kind of asshole leaves like fucking mouthful? I should have just finished it if I'd realized, but I was pretty drunk after the last episode. So, you know, clearly I wasn't paying any attention to it, but that's why I was like, shit, it's a gin emergency. We have to go.
Gin emergency. It's an emergency. It's got the word in it.
That's better than what I had.
Oh, my God. You are listening to Jaded Gamercast. Let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. Nathan, why don't you start us off?
Okay. Other than painting like a madman, I finished up my Dystopian Wars fleet, and I played in a Dystopian Wars tournament yesterday, hosted at Imaginary Wars. And, yeah, it was a ton of fun. Tom and infrequent guest host Ward... both went down, and you know, like I said, it was just a good time. I think the three of us combined for 2 wins and 7 losses, so you know, good times. Ward going 0-3, and Tom and I both going 1-2.
Fantastic.
it was fun. I had a lot of fun with it. I got to play a bunch of fleets that I'd never played before, including, you know, not going into details. But yeah, like I said, people I hadn't played before, fleets I hadn't played against before, and a ton of fun, three games, escalating point size, and hey, listen to my kid talk in the background.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're multitasking.
I am trying to multitask of, like, wave the kid off to go to bed and to talk. But no, like I said, it was fun. I'm really enjoying Dystopian Wars. Like, I'm really having a lot of fun with
you
it.
You did finish all of your Chinese?
I finished all of my Chinese. I mean, there are still things that I want to paint because I like the models and want to add in, but I didn't need them for my tournament fleet. So, like, my Dreadnought, which I just would not have been able to paint because it's a fucking... It's the biggest Dreadnought in the game. Like, it's the biggest model. So, I wouldn't have been able to get it finished in time. So, I mean, I want to do that, do up some carriers, some more tiny flyers, and I want a couple of gunships, because I like those. But, yeah, I did finish everything off. I was able to get to bed around midnight, which is better than Ward, who pulled an all-nighter and then drove to Calgary. He looks pretty rough by the end of the night, the end of the day, let me tell you. No,
you know, the hurdles that he has to deal with. Yes.
At least it's a low hurdle.
They're a matched pair. Shut up. That is the inside joke for anybody who knows what the fuck we are talking about. So for me, this week in hobby, I just basically did a little bit of painting for Star Trek Attack Wing ships and a little bit of painting for Firestorm and a lot of playing video games and being sick. That was primarily what my week consisted of. I had pink eye, which was always, you know, phenomenal. You'd be amazed how hard it is to paint with pink eye.
I don't know why, but I just, everything looks a little red.
So blurry. Oh, man. But yeah, I really did not get a ton done and didn't get a chance to play any games. I had a couple games lined up that fell through, and it just turned into one of those weeks where hobby was video games, and that was pretty much all that happened. So, hey, sure, why not? Well, I shouldn't say just video games. Editing videos, posting them to YouTube, you know, the typical shit I do. Oh, man. All right, so let's talk about the weekly listener poll, because it has been a while since we ran into a weekly listener poll result that was almost 50-50, like right down the middle. So the question that we had for you guys was, should the Imperial Knight be a Lord of War instead? And the majority, the slim majority, 45% said yes, 40% said no, and we had about 14% said third option that you didn't mention, and I have commented in the post. And that was
five. Which is interesting, five people said that.
Sounds like bullshit.
And two comments. Although one on the poll itself. So let's say three.
Let's say three. Let's say two people are assholes. We'll run it that way. You know, the more I got a chance to look into it, and the more I actually, you know, was able to compare the rules and talk to people who were either using it or looking at using it, pretty much everybody agreed that it was – that the Codex was a complete waste, that it was a total gouge. You know, $50 for three pages of rules is completely fucking upside down retarded. And everybody agreed. There was not a single person that I talked to who said, well, you know, no, I mean, it's nice. You know, I got my hardcover. You know, nobody. There was not a single fucking person out there who even for a moment thought that that was a good idea.
Well, especially because, like I said, if you had a scan or even just a picture or fuck someone telling you what you could take for allies, if mm-hmm. you were not running a full-on Imperial Knight Codex, there is no reason to buy the book. Mm-hmm. All of the rules are literally copied and pasted out of the White Dwarf. So you're just like, the only page of rules that matters even a little bit to you is the one with the Warlord trait table and then the voluntary lazy D6 roll mm-hmm. should you be playing a knight, like a knight parent codex. So again, it was a waste of time. It was a gouge because it is the only codex that is completely unnecessary. Right. Like truly, I bought my White Dwarf Weekly. I already have the rules.
Well, and I was talking with John Kingsway, and one of the things I said to him was, you know, there are more pages of rules in the data slates than there are in this codex. So why wasn't it just a data slate? Why wasn't it just a digital download? Like we've seen Games Workshop doing it. They're doing it now. Mm-hmm. The only reason why they're not doing it in this instance is because, not because they think people want the codex, you know, oh, I want all these pages of fluff in this skinny ass codex. It's because they want to gouge people for money. They want to get everyone to go buy a $50 codex. Like mm-hmm. it's fucking retarded. Everybody sees that. And even he was like, yeah, you're right. It should have been a digital download. It's way too expensive. There's absolutely nothing there. You know, what, two unit entries that are one weapon apart, or I'm sorry, two weapons apart, because one of them only has one
heavy stubber. Yeah, I was going to say, one of them has two heavy stubbers.
Which is just underpowered. I mean, why would you not upgrade to two heavy stubbers? That's all I'm saying.
But because I don't have the option to upgrade to that second heavy stubber, okay? That would be +5 points. Then they would cost the same number of points.
But then your lists would be the same again. Yeah, anyways, I think it comes down to the fact that that is on that merit alone, on that reason alone, the fact that it shouldn't be a codex to begin with, I have to agree it should be a Lord War. And that's why I voted yes on this, was because of that fact that there's absolutely no reason for it to be an Imperial Knight. None whatsoever. And that's why I'm just like, no, it should be a Lord War. It should just be a Lord War.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, like you said about data slates, the Cypher data slate is roughly the same number of pages. I think it's maybe 5 or so pages mm-hmm. less. And they gouged the fuck out of us by making me pay $17 for one model's rules. And then, you know, a couple months later, they're just like, so we discovered people are idiots and we'll pay $17 for one model. What if we can get them to pay $50 for one model's rules? Ta-da!
Crazy bananas.
Yep.
All right, so let's read a couple of the comments here. Chris Carlson said there should be a White Scar slot instead of a Lord of War slot. No surprise there. He said it acts the same, but it is a much better name. Also, I'm in favor of a cap on allied detachments, detachment points. 25% to 40% of total points, ? We 40K players are smart enough to do the percentages. Games Workshop, it's time to bring actual math and balance into the game. That's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
About the whole Force Org crap, right? Like, it, you know, they showed us in Warhammer. Oh,
sorry, let me go back a little bit. I just opened up my Cypher data slate. It is 118 pages. Huh? So it is twice as long as the Imperial Knight book. Carry on, please.
Anyways, that is a whole other conversation. Andrew says, it feels like GW have an urge to constantly tinker with their rules. First, we had the Force Org chart. Then they brought in allies. Then Lords of War. Now it's data slates and special, quote-unquote, codices, Inquisitor, Knights, etc. Sure, every game does this, but GW feels like the only one that has no underlying strategy behind it, other than sell more miniatures. A little more focus in the choice of releases might help lessen this. Maybe work on giving each faction something special instead of a half a dozen releases for the Imperium and only a few for the rest of the races. Sorry, I keep forgetting that GW is a miniatures company first. Shame they don't price their rulebooks and supplement codexes with that in mind. Ain't no way I'm paying $90 for an Imperial Knights Codex, motherfucker, in New Zealand. He started off with ain't no way, that accent came naturally. You know what I'm saying? I got street.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if it feels natural, just go with it.
For that money, I could buy a Kings of War army. And, you know, it was funny listening to Dan and Gene on Trapped in the Basement cast. That was one of the things that they commented on as well. You know, something that we've said. When you look at the cost of just a codex and one of these things, like, that is the cost of getting the army book, a patrol fleet, a carrier group, and, like, a couple blisters for a firestorm fleet and being ready to rock and roll and done and set.
Like, well, yeah, the cost of the Imperial Knight Codex with one Imperial Knight is more money than I spent on all of my Dystopian War stuff, including rulebook templates, everything.
Right. Well, and so again, like, we're not idiots. We understand it's less material, but the game is designed to make that work, whereas Games Workshop has ever slowly more and more over the years, and anybody who's been playing for as long as we have knows, games did not used to be this big. You did not used to have, you know, 55 men, you know, 60 man units, right?
When I started the game, the average army, you know, when we played at 1,000 points, the average army would run 30 to 40 models.
That's right.
When I'd play a swarm, quote unquote swarm army with Tyranids, I would be pushing the envelope at 60 to 70.
That's right.
And that was a lot of models.
Right, like my orc army, you know, I've got maybe 60, 70 orcs on the table, and back in the day, that was a lot.
Yes, whereas like now your average Marine army is running 60 to 70 models, and a true swarm is running 130 plus.
Right.
And you're just like,
well, I'm not even saying 40K. I'm talking like fantasy. Like fantasy.
So fantasy is even worse. Your average fantasy army is about 100 models strong. Like, unless you're playing specifically Ogres or Warriors of Chaos.
Right.
The average fan, like even my demon armies with a greater demon eating up 500 points will run about 80 to 90 models. You know, other armies, like even foot elves, are running 70 to 90 guys, depending on how many characters they're buying.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, you know, it's one of those things that they have slowly been training the game higher and higher and higher. And in the last couple of releases, everybody sees it and everybody knows that, you know, the cost to get into it is way higher than it used to be. Now, that's also part, you know, to blame with the community, because the community tends to like large size games. It's only recently we are seeing people kind of draw back in our area and say, nope, these are all too big. That's too big of a game to play. It's time to play back in this competitive area, you know, and really kind of just reeling back that point size. But even at that level, you're still talking about a shitload of models.
Well,
you know, every time a new edition comes out or a new book comes out, I do have to buy models. And it's not just I'm buying the new stuff. I have to buy stuff to continue to fill out my units. Like, you can look at my Skeletons unit in my Vampire Counts army and see where it started, where I had to combine two units, and then where I had to combine two units and add a bunch of plastic skeletons to it. Because it's like, you could see, you have to, like, these units just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And now I'm sitting here going like, right, I now need two of these units of skeletons, whereas in the past, I used to be able to play with three. And yeah, it's just, it's weird. All right. So we're not going to have a model of the week this week, because we're going to be talking about models. We're going to be talking about all sorts of models, stupid models, nice models, and ridiculous models. But before we do that, did you want to talk a little bit about the Dystopian Wars tournament and kind of your view on how that game plays on a tournament level?
Sure. So as I said, with This Week in Hobby, we did get to go. It was a 3-game tournament, escalating point size. So we all started out at 600 points. Then the next game was 850. Final game was 1000. And there were fleet restrictions along the way. So you couldn't take any large ships at 600, which is not what the rule book says. But I mean, if you had to buy a 200 point battleship to fill points, like you're kind of fucked at that size. And then 850, the only limitation was no dreadnoughts. And then at 1,000, you know, take what you want. In terms of the actual tournament format, we ended up just playing your typical Spartan game, you know, pre-second edition, you know, Firestorm second edition one, where we'd roll up our Admiral orders at the beginning of the game, because that's how Dystopian works. And then Adam stole your tactical maneuver mechanic.
Yes, well, I told him. I told him to.
Yeah, no, by all means. We all said... Yeah, we still gave him shit for it, and then it led to a lot of dick jokes when he was describing all of these small little islands, and he was just, like, air-stroking the cock, talking about how they're towering pillars, and that just... It escalated quickly when you have, you know, me in the room. I'm not going to pass up a good dick joke. No, but like I said, the game itself played really good. As I was talking to Kyle today about it, we were just kind of talking about the tournament. I feel like Dystopian Wars is a better tournament game than Firestorm Armada right now. And the only reason for that is the fact that games of Dystopian Wars can still end suddenly the way Firestorm games could in the last book. Like, with the battle log, if it is a fucking one-sided curb-stomping affair, unless he's a moron dipping into his battle log to fall out the bottom... I still have to play to a man. Like, I have to table him. And so the average length of games when we were playing out of the basement, 1,000-point Firestorm, was about 2 to 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Average length of games here, at all 3-point sizes, it didn't matter, was about 1 hour to 1.5 hours.
Interesting.
So yeah, like, that's why, like, I think that as a tournament game, Dystopian Wars ends up being... on one hand, a little bit nicer from a tournament organizer perspective, because you know roughly how long you need to time for it. Because, you know, like I said, games can end suddenly. But on the other hand, it does still kind of suck. Like, one of my losses, my last game, my opponent rolled up the Admiral order of destroy all large and massive class ships. And as soon as that happens, he wins. Well, I have won. I had one 170-point battleship, which... The quick key of my strategy is use it as bait to force him to overcommit to killing it, and that way I can just pounce on him, mop him up, because Chinese medium ships are amazing, and our large is pretty okay. But then he rolled that up, and he's like, so I have to destroy one ship to win? And I was like, yes, you do. And, like, yeah, of course I lost that game. You know, he literally threw the kitchen sink at me, and as much as I tried to move ships in the way and... block line of sight and screen, there's no way to stop his entire 1,000-point fleet dedicated towards doing nothing but, you know, sinking the one ship. So yeah, like I said, there's that respect to it. So I mean, I think I'm interested to see what Dystopian Wars second edition has in store, on whether it is going to still remain to be a good tournament game, and that games can be over really quick and they don't take that long to play. Or if they're going to move to a battle log system with no kind of auto win feature in, like, you know what I mean when I say the auto win, right? Yeah.
No. And I absolutely see what you're saying. I've noticed that as well. Like, you do tend to have to play games to completion. I think the only issue that I had with the way that Dystopian works, and for anybody who doesn't know it, it's almost exactly the same as the way that Firestorm 2.0 worked, right? Not 2.2.0.
Yes. Don't make that mistake.
That's right. Where you rolled up your star orders and it was kill all larges and 70% or blah, blah, or 50% and so on and so forth, right? So you could win that crushing victory by hitting your star order. The only issue that I found with that, especially when running events with it, was that there were games that would end in less than an hour because of that sudden victory. And savvy players would always win that way. And there were... you know, a good third of the players would have a crushing victory, max points, and then everyone else is kind of in the middle. And when it came to scoring, that was good, and the tactics points that I put in kind of balanced it out, but, like, there were very clear leaders and very clear, like, oh, you had a crushing victory because you got your star order? Well, you're done for the day. You know, it was just that was the way that the game functioned. I do like this for the fact that you tend to play to the end. However... I think at least three of the scenarios, if not three, at least two of the new scenarios for Firestorm, there is an opportunity for the game to end suddenly. which but I think is nice.
I was going to say, they are very difficult to achieve.
Well, which is the one not thing. Necessarily.
No, but I mean, like, honestly, because again, Kyle and I were talking at length about it this morning, and I do feel like this is an opportunity for tournament organizers to kind of step in and modify it for that fairness. Because, I mean, realistically, if you look at all of the Admiral orders for Dystopian, they're exactly what all of the Firestorm 2.0 ones were.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is, like, there are the two auto wins of prize the opponent's Admiral's vessel
mm-hmm.
and destroy all large and mediums, because other than that you've got destroy 70%, destroy all smalls and 50%, destroy all mediums and 50%, right? So I mean, you've got all of these other criteria. All you need to do as a tournament organizer for Dystopian is go in and say, okay, for these two auto wins, you must also destroy 50% of their fleet.
Well,
because when I ended up, like, when that game ended, I had lost my battleship and I had lost three destroyers. Like, this was making up maybe 25% of my total fleet points. So, I mean, I was still very much in the game. All of my heavy hitters were still basically at full strength because he ignored them. So, I mean, you know, if you're a TO and you just say, we're going to modify these in this way, it prevents those auto win scenarios.
Right.
And the other thing that we were talking about with Firestorm is you have to kind of come up with a system on the battle log where it's just like the moment it hits a spread of this many points, game's over, the other guy wins. Because as we all know, when you're playing Firestorm, if I have a plus 15 point spread on you, I've won the game. You will never, ever beat me. It doesn't matter what you do, because for me to get, you know, that 15 point spread on you, you do not have enough ships to rob me of that.
Yes.
At best, you can drop it down from a crushing victory to a major, and that's if everything goes well for you. And that's why I think that, again, if you're a tournament organizer with Firestorm Armada, you have to start coming up with almost like mercy rules on the battle log in order to speed the game up a little bit.
I don't think they have to do that at all. I mean, one of the things that I did when I was running the Firestorm...
Like 2.5 hour game? Because I mean, like,
I didn't have a single 2.5 hour game.
I was going to say, really? Because pretty much everyone had a 2.5 hour game when we played 1,000 points and out of the basement.
Yeah.
The only exception was if it was such a one-sided victory. Like when I had, you know, when I played Daryl and his dice just abandoned him and I rolled like 2 snake eye crit results.
Oh, I know.
You know, that still took an hour and a half to table him.
You play Aquins, right? Like I play Directorate. It's a faster fleet. But no, I mean, what it really comes down to is, I don't like the mercy rule. I don't like the idea of, oh, well, when this split happens, it's over, because there are very large swings that can suddenly put that split over when the game really isn't necessarily over. Give me an opportunity and I'll put together a scenario where these many heavy cruisers are left over, but this guy just lost a battleship and that swings 4 points this way. You know what I mean? Where it's like, if I put a battleship on the table and my heavy cruisers on the table, my heavy cruisers are the big hitters, but they're not necessarily the ones swinging the battle log. If I go back to the tournament that I ran for Firestorm, the way that I got around the orders and the sudden games is I every scenario there was a set order, like 2 set orders, and then you rolled off to see who was attacker, who was defender, and then you got to pick between 2 separate sets of orders that were equally balanced, right? There was very few ones that were built around auto win. As it stands right now, I think that in a timed game for Firestorm Armada, I think that there's a... Well, and I don't want to get too far into this. I mean, we're talking about models in this show. But anyways, I'll finish this thought and we'll move on here. Essentially, in a timed game scenario where you're playing the mission and you're playing with the battle log, if you have time left on the clock and you have an opportunity to mitigate your loss, you should be given that opportunity. That's my only real... drawback with it is I could have like a really shitty first 2 turns, but I'm still in the game at least for like getting some points, right?
Yeah, but you know what? I've played a number of basically every game I've played against Maddie, I have had a really shitty top 2-3 turns, and the battle log has never been more than 6 or 7 points ever. And then all of a sudden, you know, things start going well for me. The fact that Aquins are indirect damage out the ass really pays off. I'm able to, you know, close that gap, and then I really run away with it. And like I said, it just, I don't know, I feel like there is something missing from Firestorm Armada that makes it a good tournament game. Because right now, like I said, the fact of the matter is, even if it's a one-sided shit-kicking where I don't lose any models, because you've had games like that, it still takes an hour and a half, and that's fucking bananas. Like, why is it taking so long when my opponent is doing literally nothing but removing his
models?
Because
it's every turn worth of dice. Like, it doesn't just go from okay to total shit, it snowballs. And the games where you crush a guy and you lose no models, on turn two, you're not sitting there going like, man, I've lost no models and he's done, right? Like, you have an advantage,
well, and
you
start and I get bulldozing, that, right? But even like, on turn two, your battle log is reflecting the fact that it's still
not a
15-point
difference
close.
On turn two, right? What? You're almost never going to see like a 15-point difference on turn two. Even turn three, you're not going to – very rarely would you see a 15-point difference. And in all the games I've played, I've only ever had two where by turn three, the game was over, right? And it was a quick game, and it was done and over with. Anyways, but with all that said, I think that's why 800 points works very well for Firestorm Armada for tournaments, because the battle log only is a 10-point drift, and there's a lot more opportunity for somebody to go negative, like hard negative, depending on how they build their list.
Yeah, I mean, if they build their fleet like a drunken sailor, they're definitely going to bottom out pretty quick.
And none of the 800-point games that I've played so far has been more than 2 hours.
You know, again, like I said,
if you play your Terrans, you'll get a very different look on the game, too.
It's possible, and we can always revisit this after the Firestorm tourney in a few weeks, where I will be playing my Terrans. I don't know. It's just, it feels like Dystopian Wars feels like the better tournament game because of the fact that games have that finality, whereas Firestorm Armada, if your opponent isn't shunting out units to play points denial, that fucking game drags, and it drags, and it drags, and it drags. Because it's so hard to finish ships off. Like,
I've almost never had a game where it just drags and drags and drags, right? Like, where it's just like this prolonged outcome. Almost always there's some opportunity for a comeback, and the ones where there's no opportunity for a comeback, it is over by, like, turn three or four.
Like I said,
was very clearly done. Anyway,
my experience has been different because there have been three games for me where we have played 45 minutes past the point of no return, and it has not. The only difference is eventually I end up possibly squeaking in the last battle log point to go up a degree of victory, and I was just like, but why did we waste almost an hour for this? I would have been happier like getting that hour back and just
to stand around and wait for the next game.
Yeah, but if everyone is ending sooner, you're not standing around.
I think then you're cutting people off, which I don't like. Anyways, let's move on here. We're going to talk about models. So since we're talking about Firestorm, let's talk about some Firestorm models first, then we're going to get into some 40K models. Firestorm has an April 23rd release coming up here, and they hilariously had pictures on their store like 2 weeks before they put the blog post out with everything in there.
And is there actually a blog post now?
There is now a blog post.
Oh, okay. Their blog is probably one of the worst updated ones on the internet. Like, you know, this is a major company that updates their blog once a month with, like, 400 words. And you're like, really? Like, does it really take you, like, 10 words a day? Is that it? Is that you're able to write?
And, like, what's funny is the guys who are doing the store, and clearly the guys who are doing the pictures and the setup and getting everything ready to go, are on the ball. Because, yeah, like 2 weeks before the blog post goes up, you know, this thing's been on the store. So, like, I look at the store more often than I look at the blog nowadays. But anyways,
so do I.
You can get your 144-page full-color hardback fleet guide for either Alliance of Kurok or Xenian League. 20 pounds for those, which is pretty decent, to be perfectly honest. And I know some people who are absolutely going to pick those up. Exactly. I know some people who are absolutely going to pick those up. But most people who are like me don't really care. We're just going to continue to use the digital fleet manuals and be perfectly happy doing that all the time. All right, so some of the models that they're going to be releasing are existing models like the Terran Alliance Shield Cruisers. Those are the existing models. The Directorate R&D, Why Would You Ever Buy These, are the same models. But we do get to see new Dundrenzi gunships. We get to see new Cerulean gunships. And we also get
shunt cruisers. Sexy as shit.
Now that's the cruiser lineup, the medium lineup. So let's talk about those real quick. I mean, Dundrenzi, they look nice. They look like the new aesthetic, but
honestly, I didn't even notice that they were new models.
Yes, they are new models. They are slightly cleaner. They're not quite as squared off as the old gunships were, but yes, they are essentially the same model. They've just,
I mean,
you know,
but again, that's all of the Tindrenzi fleet. Terran Shield cruisers haven't changed. Nope.
Let's talk about the Cerulean gunships, because these are my favorite. I really like the changes that they made to these. I love the look of the models, that they kind of went away from...
Exactly like a Dystopian Wars Zeppelin?
Sure, I don't know. I don't really play Dystopian, so... but, you know, with these...
But you clearly like dirigibles.
I guess so. What, you don't like these models?
I think they look okay. I think of all of the models, the Rolfosa continue to shine as the best looking release. And after that, I would even rate Aquins as higher than the Ceruleans.
Well, they also got the most changes for their big ships. But I think that this is the best update because the old gunship model, kind of like not a great looking model. But these new gunships look really cool. It looks like they're much better balanced than the older ones were, and I just like the fact that they basically made it look like a really short, stout Cerulean cruiser that they added the little gunship, you know, pontoons to, for lack of a better word. But
oh my god, they are totally pontoons.
Absolutely
really
pontoons, man. But I just think they did a very good job making those guys stand out and making them look a little tougher, a little thicker, which is actually really, really nice. But yeah, let's talk about the Rolfosa shunt cruisers, because this is the first model that Spartan Games has released that you are able to mount vertically or horizontally.
Yes, which I think is very interesting, because remember, like with
you tell me, I'm gonna get ice.
Awesome. With all the new Rolfosa stuff, especially out of the new, I think, battle carrier or battle fleet, whatever the one that came out with the rulebook was called. We did see this mixture of, you know, vertical mounted ships like the battleship, horizontal ones like the cruisers, and even the new battle cruisers are horizontal mounts. So I think that it is really, really cool that they released a model that works no matter which way you orient it. Because remember, it's motherfucking space. It doesn't matter how it's, you know, what way it's showing, because with artificial gravity on the ship, who the fuck cares? And I love the fact that if you are really into that, you know, vertical aesthetic, because you got your battleship that way and you've got, you know, your cruisers and things like that, you now can choose to mount them that way. But if you do prefer the horizontal, like the battle cruisers, you know, you're...
That was one of the things for me is, you know, everybody knows that Rolfosa have probably gone through the most aesthetic changes since the beginning. And with the way that they've changed...
Aquins are on, like, the fourth look of their models.
Okay, no, you're right, Aquins. I take that back. However, Aquins never went from vertical to horizontal and then back to vertical and then horizontal again.
It's true.
And so I like the idea that they're just like, okay, listen, if you're playing one of the horizontal fleets, you can make this horizontal. Then it matches. Oh, you're playing one of the vertical fleets? Okay, you can make it vertical. It matches your existing fleet. I like that idea. I like the idea that they've basically given you the option to say, okay, we get that some of these models don't match up. So pick which
vertical
one you want.
Formation flying is a dream.
There you go. You don't have to clip those bases. And I do love the fact that they give you a set of fighter and bomber wings to go with it, because these guys are carriers.
Yes.
So I absolutely love that.
A nice touch.
So now we can talk a little bit about the Aquins. The Aquins are getting themselves a new battle carrier and a new dreadnought. So let's talk a little bit about the battle carrier here. I like the way that it looks. I think that they did a very good job of making it different enough from the battleship that when you put it on the table, it's not just going to look like same old, same old.
Mm-hmm.
But they're keeping the same aesthetic, and I really do like the design of it. And I'll say this about the Dreadnought as well, because I really like the Dreadnought too. But it does not have the same tabletop presence as the Manta. I think the Manta just looks so good on the table. And you've got so much opportunity when it comes to painting it. Like, I would still lean toward getting a Manta.
Really? I mean, for me...
Yeah, really. It's no, I'm not just lying, Nathan. This is my actual opinion.
Really? See, I just think that whatever I'm thinking in my head, you're going to say the opposite, because it's like fucking entertainment. It's like radio magic.
No, I like it.
No, listen, I absolutely love the aesthetic. For me, I find that the Manta, as someone who's painted it, A, too many fucking gemstones... But no, realistically, the mantle looks very flat. And when you are painting it, you struggle with the fact that there isn't a lot of detail on it. Now, this is packed with detail. It's got, you know, that new Aquan aesthetic, which is really growing on me. I know when they first announced the, like, battle fleets or patrol fleets, that's the words. When they first showed all the patrol fleet boxes, I really wasn't a huge fan of it because I really like the Mark II Aquan stuff. But the more they keep running with that aesthetic, the better it looks. For me, what's going to be the deciding factor is a size comparison. I want to see how big this battle carrier is next to a Manta, because right now the Manta is an impressive fucking ship. Oh, yeah. It's fucking wide. It's huge. It, you know, it's got a great silhouette. And you, like you said, it has a great presence on the board. If this battle carrier matches it, and we don't know this from their fucking computer rendering, like, we're not going to be able to see that.
Well, same thing with the Dreadnought.
Yeah, totally. Totally the same thing, like, with the Dreadnought. If this is the same size, I would replace my Manta with this in an instant. Mm-hmm. I do really like the look of it. I think that painting it, I've got so many more opportunities to really have fun, and there's details that I can add on, because that was always the thing that I was complaining about when painting them, compared to your Directorate. Because again, I love the way your Directorate look. I haven't seen another Firestorm fleet that I like as much as how your Directorate have turned out with the way you painted them. And as I was saying, when I was painting my Aquans, I was like, fuck, there just isn't enough detail. Like, even if I wanted to spend the time and try to do what you did, I couldn't, because the sculpts lack the detail that the Directorate models had. And that's why even when you look in the rule book and you see pictures of those old Mark I things, they end up just spraying, like, airbrushing this lame-ass fucking seashell camo kind of thing, because they're like, listen, the models have no detail. We just have to add something to try to break up the fact that this is all one solid color,
right? Start to finish. I think that that's absolutely fair when it comes to the Manta. However, the Medusa Dreadnought, it's got the detail.
The Medusa does have the detail, and I'm looking at a Medusa right now because there's literally one on my painting station next to where I'm podcasting. So let's talk about the new Dreadnought. Let's assume it. Actually, this is a Medusa. Make no mistake about it. As I was telling you when you sent it to me, and you're like, "Oh, what do you think about it?" I love it because it is exactly the same model, but it's all closed up. So instead of like the big, wide open tentacles, you can see they're all tight and close together. You know, all of the open beam parts at the front. Again, they're closed. So I love the idea that this is, like, you know, it has retractable kind of bits, so it's just like, this looks like it is fucking fast. Like, when you look at this Dreadnought, this sculpt of the Medusa, it looks like it's, like, ready for, like, fucking warp speed, essentially. Like, this going for speed.
One of the things that I said when describing it to somebody was, like, okay, think of a jellyfish, right, or a squid. Mm-hmm. Think of a squid, right? You know how a squid swims? Right. And like, it bunches itself up and then it stretches itself out, and it's very sleek as soon as it stretches itself out. That's what this reminds me of. It's at the height of that stretched, you know, profile of like, you know, a squid or something along those lines. Like, that's what this reminds me of. And I think that they did a very good job of making it look aquatic in that way, for sure. And I do agree with you. It's basically the same model. But I do like this one better. Like, I'll say, listen, the Medusa looks really cool on the table, but I would buy this over the Medusa. And the only reason why that is specifically because of the fact that the Medusa would be a pain in the ass to keep in one piece.
You know, I haven't painted or gamed with mine yet. And again, this is the whole, like, if I get back from Adepticon and can't get my Terrans painted, I'm going to bang out the Medusa in, like, a night, if I need to, and take Aquans to that tourney. But, I definitely see what you're saying, because even before having to paint it, one of the tentacles broke off at the midway point, and I had to end up gluing it back together, and it's too thin to pin. Like, I don't actually own a...
Play base for that.
Right? Too thin to pin?
Too thin to pin.
You know, so like I said, I can't pin it, so I'm just kind of relying on a little bit of green stuff that I added to try to give it a little more foundation, so it's not just like 2 millimeters of pewter attached to 2 millimeters of pewter, which is asking for it to break again. So I definitely get it. Like, if I was playing with this and traveling a lot, like this is going in a case and I'm going somewhere, absolutely, this is the better model for the, you know, because it's not going to break. Mm-hmm. This looks like it's one solid piece. It really does.
Yep. You know, and I also have to say, just as a whole, that the Dreadnought Group boxes that they're going to be releasing, where it's very clear that you are not receiving a, like just a Dreadnought blister like it was in the past, but you get three escorts, you know, you get flight tokens if you actually need flight tokens for it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a very smart way to do this, because people underestimate escorts in Firestorm Armada, and I'm sure it's the same in Dystopian Wars. Like, I remember when you were playing Tom, and Tom was like, yeah, I need to put some escorts on this thing after you freaking, like, boarded and captured it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, in Dystopian Wars, escorts are a little more useful, though, because in Dystopian Wars, everything is line of sight. So if I have an escort in the way, unless you are a large or massive ship, you can't shoot through the escort.
Right.
You know, so like, you know, you end up seeing escorts taken as screens for the first couple of turns just to eat those shots while your dreadnought's close. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Firestorm, like I said, it's space. So it's just like, no, I can just pull line of sight. It's assumed mm-hmm. your ship's like a little bit higher than where it is. But you are right. People underestimate escorts like fucking crazy. Like even the Dendrenzi ones. I know you're a bigger fan of the Xenian League.
RSN.
The RSN, like plus one to hit escorts. But I'm like, I love the Dendrenzi escorts because they have the gun racks that can link in with the dreadnought. So... Because this dreadnought is a beast in its fixed forward arc, but then if you get beside it, it's really a pussycat until you add those three escorts. Because mm-hmm. they add in their gun racks, and suddenly you're throwing 20 dice out on a flank, and you're just like, holy Jesus Christ. Like, there's nowhere safe from it. And
there's
I think
no happy place to be.
Yeah, there's literally no happy place with it. And seeing that it's like, what, 8-13 with 13 hull points, mm-hmm. it's not like you're having an easy time taking it off the board.
Right. Well, and the only reason, and I'll tell you the truth, the only reason why I went with the RSN ones over the Buckler class or whatever they're called now is because for the longest time you couldn't get the Dendrenzi escorts. They weren't available. And then when they kind of got rid of them and they made the new resin ones and you had to buy the resin ones with the in the pack with the frigates, and I was just like, I don't fucking need them. Like, I just, you know,
I don't need more frigates.
Exactly. Like,
so I'm not going to buy this box just for the escorts.
Exactly. Like, if I feel like I need to pick up, like, a carrier group or the dreadnought group, and the dreadnought group's going to come with those escorts, perfect. Because I probably will buy a Dendrenzi dreadnought in the future.
Yeah.
It's, why wouldn't you, right? It's too good. But it's absolutely...
If you're playing 1,200 points, easily put, like, the 350 into it uh-huh. with escorts. Just do it. You will never be mad at yourself.
No. It's an amazing ship. But anyways, so that's the Firestorm Armada releases that we've seen here. Overall, very positive. The prices are all very good. I think, you know, 27 pounds for the Dreadnought with three escorts and all the little flight tokens. Really good price. I think all the prices that they're putting on these box sets are actually really good. Mm-hmm. In some cases, the price is going up, but for the most part, it's actually cheaper to go this way.
Yeah,
It's definitely cheaper to go this way with heavy cruisers, but like I think cruisers were still mildly cheaper before. So but again, you're getting the option to do one or the other. Like, why would you complain?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and honestly, when I see everything that Spartan Games is doing with Firestorm Armada, like the way they are now presenting the lines and selling them is so much smarter than how they used to. I fucking love the fact that they're basically giving you all the one-stop shop boxes where it's just like, oh, you bought a cruiser box? Well, it comes with up to the max number of cruisers that you can, and make them heavy or regular, it doesn't matter. Here are all the bits that you need. And I really appreciate that, because even if I do want to only add a couple of ships, it's just so much better. Like, the big example is like when you have a squad of three, and your ship blisters come in packs of two. And it was such a piss off to always have to buy two blister packs and have this one ship that you will literally never use.
Right.
Just to make that kind of squad work. So like I said, I see how they're approaching their sales tactics. And I'm in love with it. I wish Games Workshop would do stuff like this where it's just like, no, this is a box. It is the maximum unit size. Because, I mean, you still have those legacies of, like, shitty GW ones that come in weird numbers where it's like, I think it's like Tomb King Skeletons where it's like, no, box of 16.
Yeah.
but all of my multiples are 10. Like, these are skeletons. I'm going to take a unit of 50. Well, three boxes is only 48, so what are you going to do to get
better
those?
Better toss a wraith than a vampire in there.
Yeah, you're like, fuck right off. Like, it's just, it's stupid. I love the way they're doing this, and I hope to God that when Dystopian Wars gets updated, which, again, is probably going to be this summer. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the worst kept secret that Spartan Games has. I hope that they move to this kind of sales system with all of that stuff, too. Because I know right now for my Chinese, I can order the individual ships off of the web store. Mm-hmm. But, like, I asked Kyle, hey, can you grab me two cruisers and a battleship? Because I want to turn those cruisers into gunships because I have the parts from the boxes of stuff I already bought. Mm-hmm. And I just want a second battleship because, you know, hey, great. You know, two large ships I loan to. And he was like, no, I can only order, like, the naval box that's the battleship, three cruisers, and nine frigates. And I was like, but I don't – of the nine frigates I already own, I've only painted four, and I can't imagine ever touching the other five. I don't need nine more fucking frigates. So I like the fact that they're breaking these up. And it's not just like, everything's in the patrol fleet box. Buy the patrol fleet box if you want.
Right, they're not just selling you battle forces, right? Like, that's, I think that's the big difference, is they're actually selling you something that you would want. I think even for people who, you know, just want a battleship are not looking at it going, yeah, but I don't want any more cruisers, so fuck you. Like, I think most people are still looking at it going like, yeah, you know what, some extra cruisers and frigates, done. You know, it's still reasonably priced, and I think that that's why, for the most part, like, I'm pretty okay with it. And the fact that they sell you everything else as a separate entity, it's pretty smart. All right, so let's move on to Games Workshop. Oh, my God, Games Workshop. Or Ermagerd.
Oh, it's totally an Ermagerd.
It's an Ermagerd. Bebop from the Ninja Turtles made into truck form. The Militarum Tempestus Torox Prima Startra Militara Torox. Astra
Militarum Torox.
God damn it. Somebody in an argument about this.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in an argument about this posted a picture of, like, an existing, like, military vehicle from 20, 30, 40 years ago that instead of wheels had tracks, and they're like, look, it existed. It fucking existed. So don't bitch. It could totally happen. And it's like, yeah, it existed. Why ain't it around right now? Tell me why it's not around now. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a silly idea. Like, if you were to put this thing beside a Chimera, right?
Yes.
Which is a perfectly reasonable futuristic tank, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just fucking retarded.
Yes.
Like, well, it's insane.
You know, it's funny with Games Workshop because they claim to make the world's best miniatures, and then we get pieces of shit like this and the Skulldozer.
They don't design the world's best miniatures.
Oh my God, that is the fucking truth. Like, right there.
Hey, they'll make amazing models with the shitty, shitty concepts.
No, I was going to say, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, it used to be a thing. Just like burning crosses in people's front yards used to be a thing. But we all realized it's a bad fucking idea, so we've moved on. But I mean, like, you know, seriously, I think what bothers me most about this model, and I'm not even going to go into any of the details because it's your typical 40K thing. You got a double assault cannon on the roof. You've got sponsons of what could be plasma guns. I don't actually know from looking at it.
The other picture I sent you, the more colorful picture.
I'm looking at the more colorful picture.
It's a twin-linked assault cannon on top is the first thing I see.
Yep. But then there's a side one right above the back dumbass stupid turret wheel, and I cannot identify what it is. But regardless, what bothers me most about this model is the fact that this is a guard model that doesn't fit the aesthetic of the guard range. Like, realistically, this would be like releasing a new Tyranid monstrous creature that looks like a fucking Mecha Godzilla. And you're like, but it's a robot. They don't use robots. Like, it just, it doesn't match the aesthetic of everything else in there. And I think that's my biggest complaint with this, is if I were to take this model and paint it up and put it next to my armies of chimeras and Lehman Russ tanks and my basilisks in the background with my fucking vendettas flying, this is going to look like it's a cheap ally. Oh, so you're allying in the retarded kids, right? Well, yeah, I mean, the short bus takes them to school. It's why they all wear helmets. Like, it's just, it's this terrible model. It doesn't fit the existing aesthetic, and that's what just boggles my mind, is, I mean, Games Workshop does such a good job of matching that aesthetic, especially when they release new things. Like, when you look at the Chaos Space Marine model, the Hellbrute hit it out of the park. Mm-hmm. Even the old, older, but still relatively recent, Mauler Fiend and Forge Fiend models look great. They really capture what is Chaos Space Marines, and they add this new unique thing into the universe. You know, it's a great looking model. It looks even better painted up. And then we get this half-assed, lazy fucking... And is there a sledgehammer above that gun? Correct. Okay, well, you know, in case of emergency, break fast.
I think it's like a double-barrel last gun or a double-barrel last cannon, that's my guess. But yes, there is a sledgehammer for no apparent reason. Apparently this thing, Ogryns will come out of it and grab the sledgehammers. But, okay, here's the thing that bugs me, even from a fluff perspective, right? And this is the issue with 40K's fluff. All right. They've established, and write this down because this is revelation. Like, this is the realness. In the 40K fluff, they've established that there is no invention, right? Nothing new gets created. Nobody, you know, creates new robots. Nobody creates new technologies. Nobody creates new anything, right? Like, there's no inventors, essentially, because anything that heralds toward the, you know, the great fall of man and, you know, the rise of AI robots, or what the fuck was it called?
Dark Age of Technology.
Dark Age of Technology. That's the one. Thank you. You're my go-to. You're my Wikipedia.
Whee!
That's right, man. You know, anything that heralds... Yeah. You need to get that tattooed. but basically, anything that heralds back toward the Dark Age of Technology is considered heresy, right? So that any piece of technology that we currently use is a standard template, right? And this is all part of the fluff where they're just like, oh yeah, bolters. Some guy invented them, and now bolters are the standard template. Lascan, it's the same thing. Chimera, Lehman Russ, you know, Rhinos, Space Marine armor. Like, all of this stuff is basically hit a stop, and it's just done because now they just venerate technology, and even the people who are supposed to know about technology or know about, you know, how to maintain this stuff, basically just rub oil onto gears and hang incense and pray. Like, they don't do anything, right? Like, they have machine spirits, but, like, it's completely insane. So when they put something like this out, it fucking drives me crazy. Like, it really, really upsets me. It's like when they put cyberwolves on the table for Space Wolves. I'm like, no, they were never in the fluff. Fuck you. They were
wolves
never in the fluff.
Riding wolves.
That's right. So this is just retcon, right? Like, and that's the only way that they can add anything new to the game is by retconning the 40K universe, right? They did it with the Necrons. They do it every single release. So it's nothing new. Every time they put out something new and they go like, oh yeah, this Eldar aspect was always around. What, you didn't fucking know about these guys? They always just have to act like it's always been there.
It's just like, it's like my girlfriend. She just goes to another school.
Exactly. Well, she lives in Canada. You wouldn't know her.
No, you're absolutely right, because again, going back to what you were saying, in First and Only, the first Gaunt's Ghost book, they actually they were talking about, not going into the plot, but at one point they were talking about how, like, a couple of, like, lowly guardsmen discovered a fucking template mass-produced, like, old Dark Age of Technology thing that just made a better knife, and the Imperium gave everyone in the squad their own world. Like, literally, like, you now own this world. You're governor. Go do whatever you want. Right, you're set for life because this knife is amazing.
This is the best knife we could ever make. It's now standard issue for every Space Marine and Guardsman. You know, like, yes, exactly. You know, but then they go and they find... Well, okay, yeah, we shouldn't give away things from the plot. But
no, anyway. Yeah, listen, I didn't want to talk about the plot, but, like...
Good stop.
you know, so like I said, it's just, it's one of those things where it's just like, hey, look, this is how technology is treated. And you're absolutely right. Every time they add something, like if it's just a tweak to an existing thing, that's all the fucking
adepts
of Mars do. You know, like when they released all the new Lehman Russ variants where we got like fucking Punisher cannons, which I think are baller because who doesn't like rolling 20 dice? You know, and we got the Executioner and the, you know, all of these other variants, no one looked at it and was just like, that's not how the Imperium works, because that's exactly how they work. They take something that exists, something that's proven, and they...
They bolt a different gun on it.
Kind of, yeah, they bolt a different gun onto it. Just like when we got Land Raider Redeemers, everyone's just like, so we get a flamethrower Land Raider? Cool. Mm-hmm. And that was that, you know, because that's literally the way the Imperium works. So, I mean, and then again, like I said, we get this fucking Bebop bullshit truck that looks stupid. It doesn't look like it's a 40K model at all. I mean, if you were to take the skulls off of it, because it's a dead giveaway, and the assault cannon off, you wouldn't even know that this is a 40K model, because it could belong to any other shitty sci-fi.
Except for that track mold. You know, that's how I would know, because that's the same track mold that's been on every tank since the beginning of Games Workshop.
As someone who's built three Razorbacks this week, you are correct.
That is correct. All right, so I...
Look, we sculpted it once in the 80s. Why would we bother doing it again?
All right, anyways, we hate it. Everyone hates it. Very, very few people are even defending this thing. It's dumb. Let's talk about the actual the Brotherhood, the Tempestus Scions, the Red Berets, as they've been known on the internet now. You know what? I have to say, I don't care. That's it.
Yep.
They're guardsmen. They look like every other guardsman model, in the same poses, holding the same weapons. You know, like their armor is slightly different. Hooray. All of this stuff. And again, don't get me wrong. They're gorgeous. They're gorgeous molds, right? But they're nothing special.
No, and you know, and that's exactly it. Is I mean, for me, I think if we were going to get a new guard infantry, I want something that is like fucking new.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we've had Cadians, we've had Catachans,
like just tank tops and muscles. Like that's all I need.
Yeah. When they released Vostroyans, people went ape shit over them because you had fucking Russian Cossack hats, you had long trench coats, you had rebreather grills. You know, this was something that was new, and people bought them up like fucking
Death Corps. Death Corps was the same thing.
Totally. Death Corps from Forge World does exactly the same thing. And so when we look at these guys, to me, these are just fancier Cadians. Like, they're not new. They're not the trench coat guard that could make Death Corps, Steel Legion, or Valhallans. They're not Desert Guard. They're not, you know, anything special. But what are they? Well, you've got your typical guard Cadian legs with a bigger knee pad. And then you've got thicker torso armor. So what are they, 4+ save? No, they're
stormtroopers.
They're still they're stormtroopers.
They're essentially stormtroopers.
Yeah, but again, like you've got a head swap, you've got a slightly thicker torso, and I'm exactly with you. I don't care.
Yeah.
This is not a kit that people have been asking for. Yeah. I mean, you know,
I think that was the other
Games Workshop East plastic Death Corps of Krieg. They would literally be paying dividends this year from everyone that lost their shit over that. Because, I mean, if I could walk into a Games Workshop store and buy Death Corps of Krieg, fucking heavy weapon squads and command squads and infantry squads, tomorrow I would start a guard army.
Oh, man. If they did that with how many other, right? If they even did that with Praetorians, if they did that with Talarns, if they did that with all of those other guard companies that used to be in metal, we had all of those options, right? I think the biggest issue that I have with this is that this would be a gorgeous conversion army. Like if somebody converted this and they were like, look, dude, I made this fucking tank, man. It looks like this British tank, because that Warthog thing looks like a British. I think they call it a Warthog. I think they call it actually a Razorback is something different like that. It was on Top Gear a couple weeks ago. I don't know.
Nice.
But basically like it looks very much like a British, you know, desert military truck. And so I get that there's a certain level of inspiration that comes from that. But if somebody had put this on the table and said, like, yeah, man, I converted this whole army, head swapped them out, green, you know, I green stuffed some berets, you know, you would be amazed. Like, you would just be like, oh, my God, man, that's fucking insane. Like, you did such a nice job. But that's one guy. That's one guy in how many thousands of people who are sitting there going like, you know what, I need to green stuff some berets. on all my dudes. You know, I'm going to head swap some Catachan heads in there. I'm going to green stuff some berets on them. I'm going to change the torso. You know, like it just, that would be an amazing conversion. But in terms of releasing this and then putting a codex out for it and putting a ridiculous vehicle out for it, it's just like, where the fuck are the Arbites, man? Mm-hmm. Where the, like, we say it once a year and it hurts us in our souls. Like, dude, it hurts so bad.
If instead of this, they gave me fucking Adeptus Mechanicus Scutari, again, even this is literally a shut up and take my money. Right. Like, I would be all over.
Dude, you and I would be back into 40K in a day.
Yes.
If they put out fucking Arbites, and again, I know somebody out there is going to be like, dude, it's Arbites. Fuck you, it's Arbites.
and
no, you pronounce it this way. Listen, it's Arbites. Go to hell. Adeptus Arbites.
If you, why don't you go start your own podcast and talk about how wrong
we are? That's right. Talk about how wrong we are or start a blog or something. God damn it. But anyways, like, oh my God, I would start that army tomorrow, man. I would do it tomorrow. But yep. Games Workshop, in all of their wisdom, for some reason can see that one dude out there in the middle of fucking nowhere going, God damn it, I need red berets. Why? Why, oh why, Jesus? Are you not answering my prayers about red berets? And they gave that guy his...
You know what, I'll even take pink berets and I'll paint them red.
That's right, man. They gave that man his dream. Good for them. I guess they're like Santa Claus in that way. I don't fucking know.
Make-A-Wish Foundation. That's right. Some poor dying kid was just like, can I get beret guardsmen in Games Workshop's just like, you know what? For you, little Timmy.
Some kid with AIDS cancer. Something just really bad where, like, even Games Workshop takes notice and they're just like, AIDS cancer, goddamn. What do you need? What do you need? He's like, red berets. They're like, in a minute. All right. AIDS cancer. Yep.
That is the name of this episode.
That is how that shit happens. So, yeah. They are fine, but I do not like them. Does that make sense?
No, it totally does, because again, they're a fine enough looking model, and I just, no one really cares. Like, that's the problem. Well, I'm sure people care. I'm sure people are, like, there are some people that are, like...
There's a couple guys who are going to start an army.
But again, like I said, it's just, it's more of the same from the guard aesthetic. Like, there are so many options and opportunities. I mean, for God's sakes, just release, like, a Chaos Guardsman, where you're just like, oh, lost in the damned! Like, there are so many modeling opportunities that would be new and unique that would be difficult conversions for people that if Games Workshop were to just release, people would love. I mean, for fuck's sakes, we have how many different variations of the same Space Marine kit? We've got the Black Templar upgrade sprue. We've got the Space Wolves upgrade sprue, the Dark Angels upgrade sprue, and then we've got Blood Drop Marines everywhere, not to mention Grey Knights. So it's like, we have five variations of Space Marines. Why can I not get variations of Guardsmen? Because, again, with Guards, sky's the limit. I mean, read through Gaunt's Ghosts. There's like 14 books, and like every single time he's describing new and different Guard units. Yep. I mean, shit, even the Tanith you could not represent out of the current Guard Codex. Right. And there's no way you're going to be able to fucking convert up all fucking straight silver on their hips with camo cloaks.
Well, like, yeah, exactly.
Like, it's so difficult. But if they were just like, look, everybody... Tanith. Right. And look, it's a digital edition, like, fucking Tanith upgrade through. Again, this is a shut up and take my money kind of moment. Like, well, I would jump on Tanith.
Well, I think
like your whole army has fucking infiltrate. You'd be like, oh.
I think the funniest thing about...
And stealth.
What you're...
Stealth, bitches.
I think the funniest thing about what you're saying, where you're like, there's so many new opportunities there, is that, yes, there are so many new opportunities, and there are so many opportunities to make things that are original and interesting, but there are so many opportunities on the other side of the table that are existing plot-defining, you know, themes that we've seen in books, that we've seen in codexes, we've seen them in the games, we've seen, like, they've been around forever. You know, Adeptus Mechanicus, the Arbite, they've been around forever. Like, all of these things are there. I think what drives me nuts so much about the aspect of Tanith, and again, like, God, I could talk about Tanith forever.
Who couldn't?
Like, a Tanith army? The best way to do that would not be to make a Tanith army. It would be like, right, so here is the Tanith data slate. you take this that many units of Tanith, and they count as your core. And everything else is a different guard unit. Because that's how the books go, where it's just like, oh yeah, no, the Tanith don't have any tanks, right? They call in these guys, and these guys are their tankers. And then they call in these guys for air support, and they call in the, you know, the Fantine, and then they call in these guys for this, and, you know, the Stormtroopers are these guys. And, you know, it would be easy to do that.
The missionary force. Right. Like, even if they were like, hey, look, clan, like, fucking Codex, you know, Tanith, you know, the same way that you have, like, Sentinels of Terra, Crimson Slaughter that just came out, things like that, where you're just like, all right, you know, this is Ibram Gaunt, okay, right? You need him. Here are his rules.
Required HQ.
Required. One. Like, you need to take him. Colonel Commissar Gaunt. And then it's just like, oh, yeah, you can. These are the units you can take. These are the ones you can't. You're not taking Chimeras. No unit can buy a Chimera.
Right.
Period. You can't buy, like, things like that. And again, there'd be so much opportunity. And I know, I mean, like, how many millions of copies of Gaunt's Ghosts have been sold, and Games Workshop still has not bothered in 15 years to make a Tanith model?
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on. Like,
well, they made the box, but, like, that was a long
time. Well, they did, where they, like, way back when they're like, look, it's five guys with camo cloaks. And then even then, when it was five pewter models with camo cloaks, I knew
four.
Yeah, that literally were just like, and I made my whole guard army out of this box. Mm-hmm. I just bought like 100 of them.
You're
like,
I bits ordered all the poses in equal numbers.
Yeah.
Did a couple of odd conversions and walked away. Yeah, no, I agree. All right, so let's talk about the Void Shield Generator. It's dumb. It's dumb. Games Workshop epic failed. Apparently, from what I had heard in the rumor mill, is that they only made 1,000 and they sold out within 9 minutes. And stores in North America out of the 1,000 received a total of 14 to sell on their shelves.
Mm.
They couldn't even meet their staff orders because Games Workshop is so short-sighted that they will literally look at something like this and go, well, if we only make 1,000, there's no way we're losing money. Right?
Right.
Like, just, why, you know, and, you know, somebody was saying to me the other day where they're just like, they could have made $1 million because of the way 40K plays right now. You know, but instead they decided to make 100,000.
Trim it in 40K. You need to drop the money for the newest, shiniest toys because it will literally win you games.
Right.
I have not read a single rule for the Void Shield Generator. I'm sure it's in the fucking strong. Cold Assault bullshit book that I refuse to buy. But again, I have no doubt that it's one of those models where people are like, but if I take this, then I can't lose games. So especially if I have like my Codex Imperial Knights, they're all scoring and now they have Void Shields with their Ion Shields and I win. I can't ever lose games. Everyone would buy it because that is how Tournament 40K plays right now. It is not balanced. It is not fun. It is not fair. It is all about who has the most money. So why would you limited run a model like this?
Mm.
It makes no sense.
Well, and everybody's basically saying like, well, I'm just going to go ahead and convert my own. And I'm like, you know what? That's totally fair. I have there's nothing bad I can say about that idea. You should absolutely just convert your own now that it's sold out. Done and done. Right? Like it's pretty hilarious. Just the whole idea of it, it's very kind of goofy, but I don't know. Like, again, every time I start talking about Games Workshop, I'm very quickly done with them.
You know, what isn't helping is the fact that we're playing other game systems that are fucking fun and great. And, like, as much as Spartan Games is still screwing the dog,
still be
like,
fucking up.
You know, God bless you, Marauders of the Rift players. Spartan Games has forsaken you, but we still love you.
Yeah. Oh, and I've seen the Marauders of the Rift rules. They exist, and they exist in a completed form.
Hey, that is not fair. They do not have a piece of artwork for the first page. Okay?
None of the digital codexes have a piece of art for the first page.
They're waiting on the art department because, you know, she went on mat leave, so we'll wait a year, and when she comes back, we'll get her to draw something out right quick, and boom, Rocker's rules. Like, you know, that's what it is. Like, sorry, like, she had a baby before she finished. Like, is this our problem? No, I mean, we're victims as much as you are.
Well, I'll tell you this much, okay? I've seen the rules, and I think it's very clear that they're waiting for the model releases in order to put these rules out, right? Because certain fleets are getting new models.
Yes.
And it's very clear that they're making them kind of go along with the existing box sets, right? So you'll be able to buy like a Dreadnought box and a Cruiser box and a Patrol Fleet box and all that kind of shit.
They do that and they're like, hey, everybody, look, it's a pathogen, a full pathogen fleet. So you have more than just a battleship and escorts.
Dude, what would you do for a pathogen patrol box right now? Would you kill a man?
Would you
watch the life drain from his eyes?
I think, you know, definitely I would do that. Like, I'm almost at the point where it's like Kevin Smith with the flying car, where it's just like, I suck two dicks
A pathogen patrol. You could sword fight in my mouth.
Absolutely. Right now. Sword fight in my mouth right now for a pathogen patrol fleet box, because holy shit. A, I think that they are the big winners out of that. And I know you're big on the Omnidyne. We're not going to talk rules, but like, there is so much potential there. And even though Spartan Games is fucking up, they're still doing so many things better than Games Workshop that when we look at this short-sighted decision to release a really shitty-looking model, like, let's be honest, I think the Void Shield Generator, even from a model perspective, is dumb, it's uninspired, there's really nothing good about it. It's your typical, look, we have cogs, and there's a Mechanicum symbol, and 40K. Pipes for no reason.
40K used to be the game about models, now it's the game about terrain. Where it's just like, oh, did you guys see that new fortifications? Damn. Like,
yeah.
Hey, you know what? Like, when did people start getting fucking excited about, you know, a building? Hey, everybody, this new building's out. It's
this building has strength D weapon.
Oh, my God. He's bricked by the bomb.
You are totally.
You see the welding on this fuck.
Oh, man, the riveting job? Like, clearly this was union work. Oh, I
son,
mean, like,
you get me started on those rivets, son. Oh, my God. Anyway.
You are totally right, and that is why I'm looking forward to getting curb stomped with my 5th edition fucking Iron Hands army at Adepticon. Because I'm like, no allies, no fortifications, no Lords of War, no data slates, fucking straight up one codex with a lot of vehicles. For I am going to get beat so bad, it's going to be hilarious.
All right, so, fuck the Void Generator.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it's not like anyone can get one.
Right. And again, Spartan Games be fucking up, but it's a good thing that they put out nice-ass models and some good fucking game systems.
And
cheap. But that's about the only thing saving them right now. All right, so let's get on to the weekly Lister Pool question for this week. And that question is, which model is stupider? Bebop? Bebop truck? Bebop truck. Let's call it Bebop truck.
Sure, Bebop truck works.
Bebop truck or Skulldozer? Which model is dumber?
Stupider? You know, this is a really hard one. Like, you know, I know I suggested this to you as the weekly Lister Pool. And I've had a couple days to think about it, and I honestly couldn't pick a loser in here. Like they're both so stupid. Like the concept is stupid, the execution is stupid. I'm not quite sure which one takes the prize of being the stupidest model Games Workshop's released in the last year. I don't know.
It's the Skulldozer for me. It's the Skulldozer, and the only reason why it's the Skulldozer.
Is it's $200?
Is because no, it was a dumb model. But the only reason why it's the Skulldozer is because of the fact that at least Bebop truck is like a pseudo design mimicking like modern technology, as opposed to a dude with a dick cannon and
by modern you clearly mean retired for thirty years.
Yes, exactly. But it doesn't have a gut cannon and a dick cannon. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not like a reject from like a 1950s like horror movie where it's like the aliens have come down. Oh, they've got tank tracks for wheels and a giant chainsaw axe and rah. So what do you do? Well, you basically run in that direction because it does not turn quick. You know, like you just,
you know, you really just have to take like the approach of the shittest falling on you, just run to the side a little bit, and you're fine.
It doesn't matter how many push-ups you do after you get out of that cryo chamber. If you can't turn left, bitch, you ain't shit. I don't even think you ever saw that movie, but that was Prometheus. Hey, something shiny.
That was the one that I was trying to do. You know, I started to watch Prometheus on Netflix because I was like, free is a price I can get into. Right, and like fair. 10 minutes in, I was like, man, I'm bored now. So I watched something else.
Fair. No, Prometheus is the movie that has everything going right for it. And then that's as far as it goes. Where it was just like, man, this movie has everything going right for it. It's a prequel to Aliens. We're going to see who the fucking, like, these gigantic, like, that carcass was. We're going to learn all this shit. Man, it's going to happen. This shit's going to fucking happen. And then the movie just keeps going and you keep going. You just realize that, like, wow, none of this is going to happen. And then it all gets kind of, like, blows its load on your chest at the end. And you're like, wow, thanks. Like, everything fell apart. Anyways, something shiny. I went and saw 300, Rise of an Empire. So the sequel to 300. I mean, it was not as good as the first one, to say the least. Zack Snyder wasn't directing it, so it just was not as good. I don't think he directed it. I know he was involved in it with Frank Miller because they got together. And I think that's more interesting than the movie was the idea that Frank Miller wrote this graphic novel, which then became a movie directed by Zack Snyder, and then however fucking many years later, what, like 9-10 years later, they put out...
It's been a long time.
It's been a long fucking time. They put out the sequel to the movie, which is essentially a prequel and then a sequel, because the events of 300 happen in the middle of the movie.
Wait, what?
Yeah, for real. Like,
but that doesn't even make sense.
No. Trust me, it makes total sense. It's just dull as fuck. That's the problem. All the characters are flat. All the characters are just like, there's three main characters outside of like the protagonist, whose name was Themistocles or something like that. And then the villain, the antagonist, was Artemisia. And she stole the show. Eva Green. Amazing. The whole movie was just fucking phenomenal. But like, there's the main protagonist. He's got like three close friends, right? Some of them die, some of them don't, and then there's a son. I could not tell you the names of those characters. I just, like, there, as far as I was concerned, they were just like backdrop pieces, because I think they may have said their names once at one point in the movie, but by the end of the movie, I was just like, I don't even know who these people are. They have no motivations. Nothing makes any goddamn sense. And then it ends, and they're clearly setting up for the third one. I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you're interested, don't pay for it. That's where I would land on it. I don't feel like I was cheated out of my money, but like...
It's just one of those things where you're like, meh!
Well, they made silly mistakes. Like, they made silly mistakes, like, making it more gory. Like, it was gory enough, the first movie. You know what I mean? Like, it was gory enough. But they decided now that, like, every time they hit somebody with a sword, like, they sword punch them, that, like, gouts of blood... Like, a gallon and a half of blood needed to spurt out of their chest. Like, their blood pressure was like 8 times the normal.
So it's Kill Bill.
Almost, not quite blood opera levels of like, why is it spraying like a garden hose? You know, but like every time they would hit them, it was just these massive globs of blood. And you're just like, why did you feel like it needed to be more bloody? Like, it was pretty, it was pretty bloody to begin with and unrealistically bloody to begin with. In this one, it's so unrealistically bloody that it just, you have to constantly remind yourself that it's a fucking, like, it's a comic book movie that's not meant to be realistic.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a weird issue. The only other issue that I had with the movie was the mongrel piece of shit assholes answering their fucking phones during the movie.
What?
Oh my God. There was two people in front of me and the bitch beside me. And each one of them answered their phone at least 3 times to text with people, right? And it was just like, you don't – jaded gamer tip, everybody. Turn your phone off. Put it on vibrate. Do not take it out of your pocket unless you have kids and it's your wife calling, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do not text. Do not reply to text, because you are ruining the movie for everyone else around you. It's so fucking distracting. It drives me crazy. But this movie was really lame in the sense that there was no plot. So, like, I didn't feel like I missed anything. I was just really angry that it happened. Yeah. I also played, you need to watch Vikings, by the way.
Do I?
Yeah. Vikings is very good, as is Arrow. But I'll keep saying this till you watch Arrow. But
I was
like,
gonna say, but it's hard though because Game of Thrones is starting up in a couple weeks.
I know, just in time, right? Like, Walking Dead is over next week
for the season,
and then that's bang right into Game of Thrones, and we're ready.
Timing then. See, I'm happy that I'll be in Chicago with HBO, so I'm totally just gonna finally watch it live instead of having to watch it like the next day.
Well then,
so I was like, woo! Even Terry's just like, so are we gonna do like a Game of Thrones watch party in our hotel room? I'm like, yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
If other people want to come, why not?
Why would we not do this? Yeah. One of the... Yeah, I sat down, I watched through it all with my wife, and definitely watching through it in like shotgun style is a lot better than watching it week to week, because the things that pissed me off week to week were just not there watching it through shotgun style. But... Walking Dead, she loves it. That's her favorite show, right? And we both watch it and we enjoy it. Like, we just finished watching the episode before we started recording. And she was, every time we get to like the last.
Complaining about buttons.
What's that?
And then complaining about buttons.
Oh, don't get me started on the fucking buttons. but basically, like, every time we get to the end of the series, the show, and, you know, there's two episodes left in the season, she's just like, what? Two episodes is bullshit. This is the only year that I've been able to say, yeah, but Game of Thrones starts up like a week and a half after this ends. And she's like, okay, I guess that's fine. You know, like, she's okay with it now. And I was just like, see, this is how the world works. This is how you got to do it.
I was going to say, see, I always think that when Archer ends, it's bullshit. Because you're just like, what do you mean you're going to make me wait another year? Fuck you.
Archer, god damn it.
Why are we not saying phrasing anymore?
The last episode was funny.
The last, yeah, that two-parter.
Why are we not saying phrasing?
That two-parter was fucking fantastic.
Now they've got a taste for hat. Were you going to say now they have a taste for hat? Yeah,
for
I was.
Schmidt Flesh? No, I was going to say hat, but it's not funny anymore.
Oh, it seems it's not funny anymore. Oh, God. Oh, what was I going to say? The other thing. Fuck, you threw me off. You threw me off my game. Anyways, I guess this is a good enough place to end as any, I suppose. Oh, well, that's right. I was going to say Nether. Let's talk about Nether a little bit.
Okay, Nether.
So for those of you who are watching the Let's Plays there, we played with Dan and Gene. Nether is a post-apocalyptic survival, quote-unquote, sim. Mm-hmm. Very pretty game in the sense that they've done some amazing level design. Like, everything looks very, very cool. And it's pretty like awe-inspiring, the cityscape that they've created for this like sandbox style of game. And we definitely had fun while we were playing it, just goofing off and arguing over who was going to get my axe when I died. But
yes,
boy oh boy, that game did not have much to it.
No, you know, like, here's the thing is I thought a lot about it right after we played, and I think that they're doing enough stuff right. Because like you said, yeah, the game is beautiful. You know, it is one of the best looking games out there. There's such an attention to detail in the environments that it's just fantastic. And the fact that we were able to, like, you know, go all over this place. We're running down streets. We're in buildings. We're in a subway. We're all over the place. We're doing all of these great things. Was fun. And I felt that the pacing of what it was pretty good, at least for when I was starting. I don't know if I'd have been happy with the pacing if I'd, you know, already been playing for 20 hours, really knew what I was doing. But the fact that there just pop up, like, missions that you could run over and go do, the downside being that it pops up for everyone on the server, so right. There's very much a good chance that when you're going to try to, like, get the supply drop, you're going to get shot in the face with a shotgun by someone, you know, more well-equipped, which, again, I think is interesting, because even when we were running around brand new, me with my fucking kitchen knife, there was a group of two people that came up, and we all just ended up stopping and looking at each other until eventually someone, you know, using the in-game client is just like, so, can we follow you? Because, like, it's one of those things where you're just like, PvP is on all the time. So when you're running around, yeah, you're by yourself, and then you see people and you pause. It's like the hunter and the deer where you're like, I don't know if he's going to shoot me or not. And all of that was very fun. Where the game fell apart for me was the fact that when you died, your character was dead, start a new character, level one, every bit of progress.
Well, that was what I wanted to talk about. Actually, since we played, they mm-hmm. did make some game updates.
Mm-hmm.
And they added a vehicle, which is amazing. Oh my god, why wasn't there a vehicle before when we needed to travel across the goddamn map?
Yeah, especially because everyone spawned random, so right. It was just like, you know, when Dan died, he was like literally the farthest point from us that he could be, and we're like, well, fuck you, Dan. We're not going to get you.
Yeah,
like,
give me another 20 minutes to run to you.
Yeah.
But they are introducing some vehicles, and they added some more weapons, and they added a couple of different nether creatures. There's like this flying harpy nether now. And then they made some graphical changes and a couple of, you know, balancing things. But they but they did actually add a feature where certain attributes that you increased, like mm-hmm. certain upgrades that you took, did stay on your character.
Yeah. Well, because like I said, that was my biggest problem. Because, like, the game feels like you would eventually get to a point where you're so stocked up, you're so ready to survive, that dying is a very insignificant chance. Like, it's not going to happen. But, I mean, like, even as we were playing, we had Dan starve to death. Because, like, mm-hmm. he just could not find food, and then eventually he died. Boop, all progress gone. Even at the point where I thought I was doing pretty good, I think there was a span of almost 2 hours where I didn't die because we were able to find good weapons. I found some food. I found some first aid kits. I was patching up. I was doing good things. I was feeling great about it. Eventually, I just died, and it was just like, there's all this time wasted. So, I mean, I think that those all sound good enough that, like, I'd be down for giving it a shot again after Adepticon.
Right. Because
holy fuck am I busy painting shit. Like, I am drunk, and I am gonna go pick up.
I think we gotta let Dan and Gene pick a game next time.
Well, because we forced them to buy Payday and Nether.
Well, Payday worked out for the best, but Nether didn't. Like, Dan apparently has already uninstalled it, and Gene hasn't so much as looked at it. So I was just like, oh wow, okay, well, damn, that's shitty. But I think we need to wait till the game is, like, fully released, or there's some sort of, like, you know, major content update where there's, you know, purpose to the game other than just checking buildings. Because that's the that is the only real quest in the game, is find shit. And that was my biggest issue with it, is all the videos that I watched, it seems like there was some very specific types of, you know, like, goals, or like, oh, go here, go to do this, go do the escort. But when you're actually in the game and they're just like, hey, escort mission available, you're like, other side of the map, I guess I need to wait a half hour till another one spawns. Yay.
A little bit closer.
Right. Or I need to die and hope I spawn near that, right? Like, it was almost like you would rather die just to hopefully fast travel.
Well, and the one thing, the one question that I also have, because I'm curious, like, when you are creating your character, you basically get, you know, do you want Johnny Avatar A or Johnny Avatar B?
Right.
You get a kitchen knife, or, hey, pay us more money and you can be the prepper or the ex-army or this and that. That'll obviously come more well-equipped.
Right.
But my question is if I pay money to unlock it, is that just that one character? And if I die, I'm back to, like, Johnny whoever?
I have no idea.
Well, and that's exactly it, is I'm like, I don't know the answer to that. And I'm not willing to give them, like, $5 to be, like, a fucking prepper who's got food for days.
Well, this
only
goes
to run into the case where it's just like, oh, shit, I died, and I can't pick him again.
Well, that kind of feeds into the whole epidemic that we're dealing with now as gamers of early release, you know, open beta style releases, right? Like, I mean, try to think of a game outside of console specific stuff, like Titanfall or something like that, where it's like a game, it's an MMO, it's something that's being released for the PC that does not have, you know, an active open beta or an active early entry thing that basically runs for like a year before the game actually comes out. And within that early entry, there's all of these pay-to-win, you know, pay-to-play. What was it in World of Planes? Was it World of Planes or what was it? No, War Thunder. We called it pay-to-plane because you could, like, buy in-game money and get these amazing planes. And, like, they were just the best because it was just like, oh, these planes are fucking amazing. You know, but, like, that's how they make their money. Like, that's how they get – that's how they work their way through, you know, the release of this game that they can't actually pay for. And at the same time, it's like, well, they don't actually even need to finish it because they can just keep releasing these updates and keep getting people to buy shit and keep getting people to pay into it, right? Like, it's not even a free-to-play model. Like, that's what drives me nuts about it, is it's not even a free-to-play model, but they're acting like it's a free-to-play model.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like we should have gone with Rust instead of Nether. But
well, remember, Nether was your choice. Because I looked at it, I was like, ah, it looks okay.
I take ownership. It looked like the better, more fun option. I'm not going to lie. It looked like the one that would actually be a fun game.
Honestly, you should have probably played DayZ, but...
Well, even DayZ's in the same boat of...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Come to think of it, it is very much in
that. I've watched a lot of people play DayZ. You run through fields for hours.
Mm.
And it's the same thing where, like, when you die, you lose everything. You don't get anything back. Oh. So you just randomly respawn, and then you have to go run enormous distances back to the people you're trying to find. If you're lucky, you can get into a car and drive there, but it still takes, like, twice as long to meet back up with your people. And that was the only reason why I didn't want to go with DayZ, was because DayZ is one of those games where, like, hey, it's all great while both of us are alive, but as soon as one of us dies, it's 20 minutes of driving toward each other. Is that what everybody really wants? Because, yeah. But, anyways.
I don't know. 20 minutes of driving to each other would probably still be more interesting than Worms.
Dude, no. You're crazy. Worms was fine.
See, like I said, I think if we had played four-player Worms, suddenly the shenanigans of that game would become hilarious.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
It would be funny, but like the two of us, where I'm just like, I don't understand any of these buttons. Okay, I guess this one. I'm gonna try it. Whoa! Totally fell off the map. Whoops. Like, it's not as interesting as, because, like, you know, it was always that whole tit for tat, you versus me, but it's just like, if I have three other people lobbing shit at me, I'm not even going to think about what's next. I'm just going to, like, you know, dick around as we record. Exactly. As in, like, try to be funny, dick around, not like, and I am jerking off to pornography.
When you try to be funny, it's not good.
If you know, it falls true. Off. Hey, I'm not going to say you're wrong.
You're a setup man. Just embrace it, Nathan. Embrace it.
It's true. I just softball it in there. That's my job.
That's how you play it, dude. That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.